בסדר. נגיד את זה עוד רגע. מול את זה עוד רגע. בסדר, בסדר. אוקיי. שם טורקינג טוב. On page, well, in the page that from Rav Avinir's commentary that you have on page, the second side, page 70, learning from the Ozat Chia, let's just read some of Rav Avinir's words to explain, and then we're going to see a little bit from the from one of the letters of Rav Kook, and I'm going to move on. Mitzvah Shem and Eretz Chayfetz. Remember that Rav Kook is telling us, as he always does, not to be discouraged and not to worry over the matzav that we see, having come out of all the long years of galus, and now we're like children who are, Baruch Hashem, able to finally express ourselves and are looking for our sense of independence, of being free from all the shibudim that we knew in the past, and unfortunately that causes tremendous, tremendous kilkulim, terrible problems in Eretz Yisrael in particular. But it's also a very encouraging sign that Baruch Hashem, that this merida, this rebellion against Hashem, against Yiddishkeit, is also part of the beginning of that time of the Shechira of Mashiach. That's what we're learning. So Rav Avinir explains a little bit more, and then we'll see from the letter of Rav Kook. So on page 7 he says, Daima hadavar la'odam ha-mekitz mishinasa. That the Jewish people now, he's explaining what Rav Kook was saying, that the Jewish people now are like a person who wakes up from his sleep. U'ba'odo ochuz b'chevli ha-shayna. And you know, there's some people that the second that they open their eyes when they wake up, they're like, they're there, they're okay. But there are other people that the second they wake up, especially if you wake them up in the middle of the night or something, they're confused. They're part asleep and part awake. So this could be compared to a person who you wake him up from his sleep and he's still held by the ropes. He's still a little bit asleep. Hayumaschil malmel givuve milim uzarmo bilti hegyoinim. He begins to mumble. He's mumbling. He's saying things that don't make sense. Remember, my wife told me that she had a roommate once in seminary that was the nicest, finest girl. But like, if you woke her up, she would start screaming out the most horrible, vulgar things at you, and she never remembered anything. She was like the, Now, why that was, where that was coming from, nobody, but it was like she would start screaming when you said, whatever her name was, like, Dina, it's time to get up. She got blank, 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 blank. It was like one terrible word after the other. It was crazy. And she didn't remember, though, that she didn't remember. I think probably somebody must have discussed it. It was embarrassing. She was like half asleep, half awake. And so you could say things that are crazy. Words that are strange and don't make sense. Let's say there's a person who, God forbid, was in a coma. Hashem Yerachem was in a coma. He's not saying anything. It's very easy for the nurses. It's mechayev for the nurses when a person's in a coma. They just keep everything attached, and they look at the charts, and they're just waiting until the person leaves the world. And then all of a sudden, the person starts to, the person who was in a coma for 2 months, for 3 months, all of a sudden starts to scream and to pull at his wires and stuff. And the family is there, and everybody starts to cheer and to clap, and everybody's so excited. Somebody that's watching us from the side would think it's crazy. When everything was nice and quiet, and we'd be sitting around and reading from little books, which tell them, and the person's lying there peacefully, then it looks like it's nice. And now this person is screaming, he's pulling wires, and he's yelling at the nurses all crazy things. So it looks like it's terrible. But the emes is, everybody's happy. The whole family's excited. The nurses start clapping. Everybody's excited because He's no longer in that state of being not in the world. He's coming back into the world. Now, coming back into the world, he's in between being in the coma and being completely conscious. There's that agitated, in-between, funny situation. And he's using this to explain what Rav Kook is teaching us, the storm that Chazal told us is going to be the end of time. That's like a person coming out of a coma. Coming out of a coma. Ramesh. It's a very good marshal. Coming out... Yeah, take it. I don't need it. A person coming out of a coma. That on the one hand, there was a certain ruchnistic reality that we lived in during the years of Golas. Of course, life was terrible for the most part, the Gashmias, but in Ruchnias, with our Kehilas, and our Gedolim, and Sadiqim, and everybody, kept mitzvahs for the most part. I mean, there were pockets here and there, but for the most part, it was a world of Shemius HaMitzvahs, and of Liman HaTorah, and Kibbut Av Ve'Em. And it was good. But in a certain way, we were in that place of Ani Yishena, being asleep, in Golas. Chazal say, Ani Yishena is in Golas. And even though in Ruchnius we were in a quiet state, in a secure, confident, quiet state, but we weren't fully awake. We weren't ourselves. We weren't ourselves. The same way we were learning last week, that when the baby is little and everything is gewaltig, and the kid listens to everything the parents say, and now that the kid is getting a little bit older, and everything is no, I don't want to, no, I'm not doing it. Everything is different. So it's the same thing. Watching from the side, the little child. It's so nice. The child listens to everything. He says yes to everything, does everything he's told. And now that he's a teenager, everything is a fight, everything is a mulchama, and everything is no. But a person who understands is celebrating this child growing up. I mean, you stand by bar mitzvah, and everybody's making a big simcha by bar mitzvah. Anybody with a little bit of seichel, certainly anybody that had another kid knows that like this bad stuff that's going to be coming up most likely. Bad stuff, I mean, that doesn't chasrom should be bad, but it's not like having a little kid. It gets confusing. And the kids start to say, I don't want to, this is not for me, and I don't like to do this, I'm not going. And it gets harder. But we're happy, because it's a simon that the kid is awake. It's a simon that he's growing up. The Jewish people were, in a certain way, in a state of coma over the long years of Golus. Away from our home, away from Nevuah, we were just not ourselves. So that brought a certain type of a quiet in Ruchnius. There was a certain quiet that came with that. But it wasn't a healthy way. Now Rav Kook is describing the storm at the end of time, which Chazal long ago told us is going to be the merida, the rebelling and so on. It's waking up from a coma and feeling disoriented, like you're being woken up in the middle of the night, or you're asleep and you're in a deep sleep, and that they wake you up and you're disoriented. So the Jewish people in our rebelliousness right now are disoriented. It's not the emes of rebellion against Malchus Hashem. We're disoriented. There's a confusion. And that's what he's saying. B'cholof and Vade, Rav Avinir was explaining, B'cholof and Vade, Shematzev Eirus, being awake, the matzev of being conscious and awake, Hari Hu Odif, it's preferable, Mimatzav Hashena Adom Lamisa, to being asleep, which is 1/60th of death. But being awake comes with all types of problems. Kach Am Yisrael Loyosa Shtuyos Lo Gorm LeKilkulim Shana Mishuna B'Meshach Alpayim Shana. So Am Yisrael for thousands of years, weren't getting tattoos and stuff, Right when you come to the old city, right when you come to Mamila, there's a big, this huge tattoo parlor, right? On the way going into Mamila, going up to the Harabais, going to Yisrael. There's a place where Jews, the Jews are going to get tattoos. Jews are giving their tattoos and Jews are getting their tattoos.
So if you, in the old, even the years ago, even the biggest Mechal Shabbos, Neuchon Neveles Trevis, wouldn't do such a thing to get tattooed. It was like seeing, like you're crossing over to the other side. A Jew should do such a thing. Now I'm in Yerushalayim. I go to the mikveh. They're Balik Shuvah walking around with tattoos. It was never such a thing. And those are the Balik Shuvah. And you have the Israelis that are getting this, that became very popular. So we didn't have all kinds of shtiyot when we were in Golos. We didn't have all these different shtiyot. I'm just using that as an example, tattooing. But all kinds of mashunatika things, strange things. Because in Golos we were deep into that place of Tademas Mavis. So we weren't acting up the way that we are now. We're acting up now. Even the Meridas, even the rebellions that took place 100 years ago, 200, 300 years ago, they were more philosophical Meridas. You know what I mean? They were like the Haskalah. It wasn't that they were like behaving in a crazy way with Hefkeris. It wasn't Hefkeris. They were refined people and they conducted their lives in a refined way. It wasn't like now. The Meridas, theological rebellions, philosophical rebellions. It wasn't like, you know, coming home at 4 a.m. drunk. That wasn't a Jewish way of living. Somebody would they would be awake at 4 a.m. with questions about God's existence. That was the rebellion then, or stiris and. You know, between the Rambam and Reb Sadia Gaon or something. This was the rebelliousness. Do I believe in God? Don't I believe in God? Torah Shebaal Peh is true, it's not true. This was the acting out and the craziness of those years. But now it's at the end of time, it's just wild. It's just a wild hefkeres. Like somebody who was awakened in the middle of his sleep and has come out of a long time of being close to death. V'ata hekits hakeits, and now suddenly he's awake. Years ago there was a film like that based on a book because of something that really happened where there were people who were unconscious, and for a long time, and then they were able to bring them. They was some sort of a drug that they were able to bring these people out of their consciousness, and they remembered from the past. I don't remember the protum of it, huh?
That autism, they
were autistic, and then they had some medicine, and they ended up having much bigger tsaros when they were brought out of that state. They couldn't adjust. Yeah, they were like sort of autistic, like I think like a little bit higher functioning, and then they had some this medication, and they became fully functioning. But as a result of that, they couldn't deal with the chaos of understanding everything. They had a shiras kalim, and then it wore off, or they couldn't somehow with this medication. I don't know the problem, but they couldn't continue with this medication, and they reverted slowly. They were reverting back to that autistic state, and then they were happy. You know, they were like they used to be, and it was that craziness when they came out of the autism, and living in a metzias that they didn't understand. So in a certain way, this mitzvah that we're in now at the end of time, having woken up from the long years of Golas, so it's like coming out of a semi-type of autism, where things were much calmer, and things were much when you see people who are laying that, that have these kind of things like autism, or you see people who are, have severe mental inyanim, so for the most part, Down syndrome, they're like happy, they're happy chaver. You see one of these Down syndrome kids, to bring him out of that inyan, would be bringing him into all of the tsaras and all of the things that we're going through, that we're feeling. Not that it's chalila a good thing to have that, because a person needs to be in the mitzvahs. We need to wake up. But that certainly would not be better in terms of that Down syndrome person feeling good and feeling happy. They're always happy, that chav. You speak to them, the mom is the happiest people. The worst thing you do for them is to bring him out of that matzah. The only reason it's a mitzvah to do such a thing, if you could do it, is because sof kol sof, a person is supposed to be bal bechira. They're not bali bechira. But in terms of happiness, in terms of things going being good and nice, and they're the happiest people, the Down syndrome. They're always happy. They're the sweetest, happiest people. It's always like, it's a funny thing. The people who are metapel in them have so many different inyanim. But they're totally fine. They're happy. But it's rachmanis because they're not in a healthy. Being in this world means contending with contradictions and conflict and so on. They don't have that in their world. So in a certain way, over the long years of Golas, because of the Metzias that we were in, that Matzah that we were in, we didn't have to contend with certain things, with certain contradictions. We were living in a cocoon of our own kehilas, in those places, in that world, and we didn't have to face the way that we're facing now the outside world. It wasn't a place that we were allowed into for the most part, and we didn't have to face the challenges of being in the world. But now everything is open, and the whole world is open. And this is where Islam is now giving us these nisyanis of being fully awake and how we're going to behave. And we're kicking and screaming and getting tattoos and stuff, and we're carrying on. Is that bad? Of course, they're terrible kilkulim. But on the other hand, it's a sign of a people that have finally woken up, that we're awake. But being awake brings all kinds of challenges. Everybody's a good parent when the kids are sleeping, you know what I mean? It's not a chokhmah when the kids are sleeping. You're always a good parent when the kids are sleeping. But the second the kid wakes up, when they're teenagers, they wake up like hollering. They wake up like with a scream. It's gaba kari. The kid wakes up, he's already, he has tinnitus like the second he wakes up. Yeah, they wake up. When they're sleeping, it's not a chokhmah to be a parent. So now we're awake, and now all the teachers are having problems, and the parents are having problems with the kids in the yeshivas, that they don't want to learn, they don't want to do this, they don't want to do that. Yeah, because they woke up. Same thing when the kid's autistic or the kid's Down syndrome, nobody has any problems. Are you happy? It's gewaldig. It's okay. You do that, try that with some 15-year-old now. You happy? No. You like this that I bought you? No. Is life good? No. That's a person who's awake. It's no chokhmah to be a rebbe for people who are sleeping, right? To be a rebbe for people who are sleeping, it's a chokhmah. To be a mother or a father for kids that are sleeping, it's not a chokhmah. To be a rebbe for people who, for children who are awake, to be a parent for children who are awake, it's a big chokhmah. So that's what we're in there right now. So the rebbeim, everybody's having a hard time. Parents, rebbeim, they didn't have like, you know, in Salonika in 1825 parenting, you know, seminars and stuff. Doesn't mean everybody did it right, but they listened. For the most part, 50 years ago, we also listened to our parents. I wasn't always happy, but they tell you to do something, you did it. I don't listen to any. I don't remember feeling, maybe I'm misreading or looking back in a different way. I don't remember feeling angry or anything like that. So sometimes I wanted to do so. I go somewhere. My father said no. So I said, "Well, it's chaval. Next time." I don't remember thinking like, "I'm going to leave Yiddishkeit now." I never had such a thought. I'm not going to put on film tomorrow because my father didn't let me go to the basketball game. You know, And that happened a lot, because there were a lot of things that the European parents did that the Americans, you know, that we weren't allowed to do. The Americans were doing all this kind of stuff, and they went, you know, race car driving things. And my father said, no. And I never remember thinking that. I said, I'm done with Shabbos. What does Shabbos have with my father's opinion? I never made the connection. My father thinks that it's not safe for me to go when I'm 15 in a car or something. My friends were doing stuff like that, and my father didn't agree with me. I didn't think, you know what? I'm not going to keep Shabbos now. I'm angry. I'm not going to keep Shabbos. What is my father's opinion about going in a car have to do with Shabbos? It's a good kasha, no? But now, every parent's nervous. My kid comes home. He's back from college. He has 2 weeks off. He wants to go skydiving over the Himalayas, and he's telling me, "You better say yes." You understand? You say, "Skydiving is dangerous. If you don't say yes, first of all, I'm not going to go back to school. Second of all, I'm not going to put on tefillin tomorrow. It could get worse than that. I might end up taking drugs. Who knows? If I don't go to the Himalayas, skydiving in the Himalayas, I might end up taking drugs." And even if the kid doesn't say that, the parents are nervous. My kid's going to end up taking drugs if I don't let him go skydiving or something. My parents never had daggers like that, and I never felt like that. And even my friends that had some friends that were a little bit kookier, they did some wild stuff. It was never an Indian like, you know, like, I don't know, it wasn't a connection that was made to putting on tefillin. It was no connection like that. I had friends of mine that in those years it was just starting marijuana, it was getting popular. But they smoked marijuana, and they put on tefillin. I don't know, it wasn't like a steer. Like I have to go off the derech or do anything drastic or make some great statement and teach my parents a lesson or anything like that. It wasn't. So does that mean that we were better than the kids are now? The Swami say that the children of the end of time are the holiest children that we have. These children that we have now are the holiest children. The ones that give you the biggest ride for your money, the Tohu children, those are the most chashuva children. Our generation now, these are the most chashuva children that we have. That have ever lived in the history of the Jewish people is now. Because they're the most awake. But being so awake makes it hard for parents and for teachers. It makes it hard. And they're in this constant, like, state of either yes or either no. Like Rav Kook writes in the Iris, that in the Iris HaKadosh, but he writes in the Iris HaKadosh, that there are certain neshamas, which we learned this together, there are certain neshamas that their way is a way that's just a way of sheket, a way of quiet. And there are other neshamas that there's a way of tov, that everything is a commotion, everything's a big tumult. The highest neshamas are the ones that are tumbling, not the ones that everything is yes, everything is good, everything. That's a fashluf in a dark. That's being asleep. When you're awake, you have in yonim. So for such a long time, that's because kach am yisrael lo asa shtuyot. We didn't do all kinds of crazy things. But how was it? You remember back in the old days? I'm talking about really the old days when there was nevuah. You remember what was it like back then? Crazy. When you open up the Tanakh, could you imagine like a day like that in school? Like what was going on when you learned Yehoshua Shoftim? Like what was a day like in school, like in Cheder, back in those years? Like every little kid was, forget about that he was carrying, whether he had an iPhone, you know, a smartphone, they were like carrying swords. The world was totally crazy. And Jews are running around with little Salems in their pockets, with Avodah Zarahs in their pockets. Now a kid has a phone in his pocket. They were walking around with Baal, you know, walking around with statues. And there were all kinds of crazy, sick things with Gilei Raya, Shvichas Dom. Look at Navi. Because that's before we fell asleep in Golos. And when we were awake in those years, of Nevuah, we were mamish awake, there was crazy stuff going on. Crazy stuff. Then there was tattooing and Avodah Zarah, crazy things. Once we went out into Golos, internally, things got quieter. We were in a semi-conscious state. Things got quiet. But when we had Nevuah, when there was Nevuah in the world, it was crazy. And now there's the resurgence of Ruach HaKodesh. Nevuah is going to be coming back soon in a very clear and open way.
Hashem is pouring his ruach upon us. It's happening. It's not, we came back to Israel. We're coming back to ourselves. And now there's the crazy stuff. You know that in the time of the Nevi'im were called Mishugoyim. We see in Navi, they were called, people looked at them, they were Mishugoyim. The Nevi'im were Mishugoyim. They weren't regular people, calm people. Nevi'im were not like the easiest kids in class. Nevi'im were Mishugoyim. They acted in a way like Mishugoyim. The B'ditchva was we see the stories from the Kedushas Levi, and the Rebbe of Zushi was jumping on the table and knocking things over. They were Mishugoyim. It was like unplugged, awake, fully awake. A Jew in a fully awake state was the B'ditchva. But like years before Mashiach, the B'ditchva was there. And he was crazy. You couldn't control him. The way he acted. The Rebbe of Zushi, these were tzaddikim, that they were completely awake. And it couldn't have been easy to have the B'ditchev in a classroom. That couldn't have. It says that he used to be jumping as an adult. He used to be running all the time and jumping from one, like Rabbi Kiva says, right? He used to be jumping and doing somersaults. The Rebbe of Zush used to, all of a sudden, you read about even the Rebbe, the Piazetsa, the Eish Kodesh, right? When he wanted to do somersaults. You remember the piece in the Tzavaziru, where he's describing how he wanted, it was Hachnasa Sefer Torah, and he wanted to do something. He didn't know what to do. He was feeling like doing, he had to do something crazy. Because he described the way he felt, but then he was thinking, but I don't know, how can I do this, people? And then the next thing he knows, he starts doing all kinds of crazy somersaults. Now, if one of us does that, the person next to him should say, will you stop doing that, please? You know, like, you're making a fool of yourself. But when the Rebbe did that, the Olam stood back and was, you're seeing like a flashback to the time of Nevuah. Because the Rebbe, the Pius Eslam, was in that sugya very, very much of Nevuah. You know, in the Vayashom, we learned it together. You were seeing like something from ancient times. You saw a Jew that was completely awake. No more, non-comatose. Fully awake, fully aware, fully engaged. And a Jew like that is crazy. Because we don't have all the kelim yet of Mashiach, right? So it's not the control like in such a thing. But you see that there were people that were like that. Even if you follow in Reb Tzvi Meir's Ogozon Zayin, Reb Tzvi Meir's, it's not a regular thing. It's not a regular thing. There are neshamas like that. There are people that are like that. There are stories that we have from Rav Kook, very, very remarkable things. When he would go into that place of Dveikus, the Baal Tanya, from different tzaddikim, with the Baal Tanya screaming on the floor and yelling, we don't know the good stories because they would hide, they would be so hidden, they would go someplace where you couldn't see it. But every now and then there was something that came out that they, when they saw the Baal Tanya, it was Pashatis, Kutanti, Echechal, Bashan, after Shabbos, that he went someplace and there was somebody that saw screaming and yelling on the floor. It's fully awake. If can you imagine if a ditcher would come into our shuls and see the way that we daven, he would run up to each one of us and start shaking us. Wake up, what's the matter with you? He said, I'm up. Wake up. The B'ditchah would be shaking us. Wake up, what's the matter with you? Wake up. He wouldn't understand what kind of davening is this. Wake up. It's a different... So that's where we are now. But being awake brings with it all kinds of irregularities. And kilkulim. Strange things. Kilkulim, because we don't have the proper kelim. Vata haketz heketz. Avaraka chel haketz. Uberega zeh hineni meruthim. But, and at this moment, there's a certain where we are now is a week of a milo yoving. You know, there's movement means there's a certain weakness in our Yiddishkeit. There's certain strange things of a milo yoving. Kimatzav zeliyaruch, kuyelach veor. But this is not going to continue. He's quoting from Rav Kook. This is not going to continue. Rav Kook says, Kimatzav zeliyaruch. We'll see the letter in a second. Kimatzes Eliyarok. This matzah is not going to go on for a long time. Hu yelach va'or. It will go on and there'll be more and more light. I don't know what's he saying here, Yeshane. It's Yeshananu, well, in the past tense. We slept. Yeshananu. In the past we were sleeping. Omnam Shena Bilti Ni'ima. But an unpleasant sleep. Like someone who's unconscious. Nobody's happy that this person is in a coma or unconscious. It's terrible. Al Bifnim Nishar Oitza Chaim Godl Shemakor Chaim. All the years that we were sleeping, inside, Bifnim, Nisha, there was what? Oitza Chaim Godl Shemakor Chaim Lu'umim. There always remained an Oitza Chaim Godl, a great treasure of powerful life, Shemakor Chaim Lu'umim, from the source of our national life. Rishumim u'miyuchadim lanu, that are deeply ingrained in us and are unique to us. Sekan ha'amim, the oldest of all nations, Yokitz v'yisoyer, is going to wake up. V'yisoyer is now waking up. Rav Kook spoke about how this is going to happen more and more and more. And he already saw in his generation that there was such craziness that was going on with all the different movements and stuff, the communism and the Zionism, and all the things that were going on, and people. But compared to now, Yizkar is Arzo. Rav Kook said that the nation, this ancient old people that's waking up, Yizkar is Arzo, is going to remember their country, their land. For thousands of years, we were, again, yeah, we thought of Eretz Yisrael, we said in our davening, but it wasn't like this now. The feeling, the connection to Eretz Yisrael, like it is now. As Chasno Uchvaido, we're going to remember our great honor, our great Madrega, like a person who, God forbid, was unconscious. And when you're unconscious, also, it's not a nice thing, but a person's unconscious, they have to take care of the bathroom. Can't go to the bathroom, right? So they have to have a bedpan. And then all of a sudden, a person wakes up from unconsciousness, God forbid, for a person to be in such a state. And a person wakes up, and it's bizyonis, right? Looks at himself bizyonis. Where was my self-respect? He feels embarrassed because during the time that he was sick, he was doing, it wasn't in control of himself, and all kinds of things that are not pleasant that happen. But where's the covet of the Jewish people? Ten covet la'amecha. Where's the covet to have self-respect? So Rav Kook says we're going to remember our land as chasno uchvodo. Yizkor is Shefa HaChaim, and we're going to like wake up out of this coma and remember Shefa HaChaim, the great abundance of life, of true life that we once had back in the days when there was Nevuah, when we had a Beis HaMikdash. Yizkor is Shefa HaChaim asher yishpia al Adam Rav Yoshu Lavadaso L'koimim HaRisosav. We're going to get back to work L'koimim HaRisosav, and we're going to fix and repair all that we've ruined over the years, all that's been ruined. We're going to fix the whole Churban. To go back to the way that it was before we fell asleep, before we entered into that semi-conscious state of Golus. You know, the other day, one of the Chera was telling me. Charlie was telling me that he read a book about a study that was made. Charlie Rabbit's time. He read a book about a study that was made years ago. I don't know, maybe 20 years ago. I don't remember. He told me it sounds like it was a Jewish lady. I forgot the name. Maybe some of you know this. It's probably a famous thing. I never heard of it. And Charlie said that there was this in this study. This lady took like a whole chevra of older men, like between 70 and 80. This whole chevra of older men, and she had recreated. They went like some sort of a camp. I don't know what they were told this was about, or what the inyan was, why they were. But you know what I'm talking about, Berish. They went to some sort of a place, and they recreated like the 1950s. They made it like the 1950s again, and they gave them like jobs and tasks, these older men, to do certain things. Many of them have been veterans and things like that, and they gave them also some uniforms to be part of this chevra. And what they found was
that, and it was like old music playing. They had like old car. It was like everything was set up like from the old, and they gave them like different inyanim that they were in charge of. Now these were people that were before that were like barely walking, not doing stuff, you know. And over the course of a few days, the study was showing that all of their vital systems, like their blood and their pulse and their all the medical stuff, that all of the things were like were changing crazy, were getting better. And even different machlis that these people had, certain machlis, that they were like, things were getting better. Without any medicine, without anything, everything was like coming back to life. So the theory that this person had, this lady had, was that with old age and the certain coddling that older people will get, their mind becomes stuck in that old way, in a place of being like asleep, old, and incapable. And when they were brought back to that time in their life, when they were awake and alive, and it's sort of recreated, the environment is recreated, and they're given things to do. So she found she, in this study, that they were doing much, 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 much more, and their body was, everything was different, was coming back to life. It's a fascinating thing.
57 Chevy.
What?
Give me back on my 57 Chevy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ellen Langer counterclockwise.
What's it called?
Ellen Langer.
Langer. The Jewish name.
Yeah,
counterclockwise. How long ago was that written?
She wrote her book in 2009.
2009?
Yeah, but the study was done much earlier. In 1979, she did the experiment.
Do me a favor, send it to my thing. I'd like to, because I was talking to my wife about it, and I think it's a fascinating thing, like, you know, the kayach of a person's mind and a way of thinking and where you are in that, in your head. Where you are in your head. It's an amazing thing.
They went hiking and
doing these old
youthful activities.
Yeah. Not like it is when you put them out like the pasture. And it's like, and like retirement, you know, modern, you know, like retirement. And, yeah, like they just like sit in a chair and like just, take a slow walk. And they were given this, they were given the chevre here, this old chevre, like hiking and stuff to do. And they came out, and they were coming out of the sleep.
They were going backpacking in the mountains.
Oh, they have pictures? Let me see.
Backpacking in the mountains.
You know, I feel like I could use that. I mean, I resist it, but I feel like I could use it. So it was a funny thing, because Charlie was telling me this whole sugya. We were discussing, because in the airport together, the other day we went off to teach in this place, and that Charlie does not let me pick up my suitcase. You know, he's a Sephardi, and he's a great guy, and Charlie doesn't let me take my suitcase. And I keep on slapping his hand to let me take my own suitcase. And he says, Rabbi, no. I said, you just told me that you're treating him like an old guy. Like, you're telling me that it's not good to coddle old people. Now, what am I, an old guy that I can't take my own thing? It's got wheels on it. Like, leave me alone. But he wouldn't. He said, nope, because that's not talking about your Rebbe. That's talking about stam old people. But if somebody's my Rebbe, I can't. Right? But it's like to be awake. Like, for an old person, I was thinking about it so much, to like wake up back in the 1950s. Of course, there are a lot of other things that come with that. It's complicated. But to have one's chias, a taste of one's chias before things started to light, before you were falling asleep. In a certain way, like to be like a little bit the karchas of a young person again. I found the whole thing is very, very touching, very beautiful to do such a thing. And people who understand the moich of a human being can help in so many ways without having to get the shots and all kinds of things and drugs. And if that's with old people, helping them feel young, Allah has kama v'kama, that you could help young people without giving them shots, no? But you go now to any yeshiva, half the boys in the class are drugged. You know that. Half the kids in any yeshiva class, half of them are on drugs. I don't mean narcotics, I mean that they're being drugged because he moves too much in his chair, or he calls out a lot, and calls out. It was on the news. I heard last night on the news that some public school, someplace, I don't know if it's in New York, but there were teachers that were fired because they put on some kid that was acting up. They put, you know, that tape that's very strong tape. It's called duct tape. They put duct tape on some kid's hands. I guess the kid was a difficult kid, so they put duct tape around the kid's hand. So the teachers, that's it. They're finished. They're probably going to close down the school also. The whole town might have to move. I don't know what's going to happen. But the teachers are fired. They're out. They put duct tape. I remember in class, I don't know if it was duct tape, but I remember they put tape on kids' mouths. I remember they did that. That they do in the class by us Kaseda. That was a regular thing. I had a Rebbe that would put his handkerchief, which he used for blowing his nose. He used to put it around the kid's mouth and tie it. I had that in third grade. My third grade Rebbe would put his used handkerchief in the kid's mouth. He would hold the kid's head against the wall and take the handkerchief and tie it in his mouth. And says, if you make too much noise, he's going to be quiet. And the kid would sit like that, choking on the Rebbe's onion like this. Nice? It worked. Because it was nice. It was quiet. Class was quiet. It's hard when you have kids who are awake. Huh? It's hard when the kids are awake. It's hard when the kids are expressing their opinion. Everybody wants to have children without opinions, right? What if you have a kid that has opinions? It's better to have children than to have any opinions, right? If you had to vote, I want my kid to have no opinions, only my opinions. No opinions of his own. No opinions of her own. My opinions. Everything I think, I want my kid to think. It's a machaya.
Full attitude.
But it's not awake. It's not alive. When there's a kid that has his own opinions, it's hard. So that's how Rav Kook looked at our generation. Like waking up. Waking up. I think that was the name of that book, that movie.
Awakening.
You know what I'm talking about?
Sure.
Awakening.
Yeah.
We showed it once in school. I don't know if you saw that years ago. Awakening. Very harsh of a thing. But when Mashiach comes, it will be with all the healthy kalim. Obviously, it's scary when you don't have the healthy kalim. That's why that when
they put them to sleep for
when the kalim are not healthy, so then there are all kinds of kilkulim. Let's look a little bit at Rav Kook's letter. The language of Rav Kook's letter is it's like, you know, you have to hold back not to start licking the page. 1336 from one of his letters, the Igris. It can't be translated into Valdrar Hayeyush. So Rav Kook is writing back to a big person who was a big Talmud Chacham who had sorrows with his children. A lot of sorrows with his children. And was living through that stormy time. Valdvar HaYeyush Kvodah Marfiz Alamida. So he said regarding the Yeyush, the Rav Kook saw in the letter that there was a lot of Yeyush, like despair. Yeyush. It's the opposite of the Mida. Now we're finishing the Mida of Netzach, right? Netzach is the opposite of Yeyush. L'Netzach is the opposite of Yeyush. Yeyush. V'aldra ha-Yeyush. Kvodah Marfiz al-Mida. He says, Kvodah, I mean, Rav Kook's writing back to this Talmud Chacham, Your Honor, he says, you're exaggerating. Marfiz al-Mida, you're going way overboard with this Yeyush. What's with the Yeyush? What's with the despair? Emes ha-Dover. Rav Kook says, it's true, I'm not arguing. She-Yeradnu harbe. I'm not arguing that there's big Yeridas, Shabbos and all the Kil Shabbos and Tarfis. Of course, that was all going on. Rav Kook says, I'm not arguing that Yeradnu harbe. And as the Metzias is that there's a big Yerida. Ha-Hamon, the masses, the multitudes, v'yichidei ha-skula gam yachad. Even people, yichidei school, even like people who really are people who are extraordinary, brilliant people, gifted people. There's a big Yerida. From all different types of Jews, there's a big Yerida. Gam Yachad. From the simplest Jews to the most choshev Jews, there's a big Yerida. Avok shenestakel yofe. But if we look at things in the yofe, if we look at things in a good way, in a proper way, nimtza pisron ha-Yerida,
we will find the solution to this Yerida, to understand it and to begin to fix it, to this mystery. Because the Rav was writing to him is, what's going on? What's happening over here? What's this Yerida? Used to be everybody kept Shabbos. None of us, no one wants to keep Shabbos. What's going on? Nimtza Pisun HaYerida Be'etzem Tchunas Hischadshu Sachayim HaYose Tovim V'Nalim HaTzvuyim L'Umasein. The solution to this mystery Rav Kook is saying is that this shows us this we see from this itself, from what's going on, from the big Yerida that's going on, we see in that the Tchunas Hischadshu Sachayim, this character, this quality of a hischadshu sachayim, of a renewal of life, coming back to life. Hayosa tovim, Jews want now hischadshu hamayosa tovim. We're not going to settle anymore for a miserable life. Hischadshu hamayosa tovim, the highest kind of v'nalim hatsuim l'masein, because there's what's awaiting the Jewish people is the most beautiful life. So now this. The fact that people have all these kilkulim and these yeridas, Rav Kook says, you're looking at it and it's causing it to be misyayish. I'm looking at it and it's causing me to have the biggest excitement and hope that Jews are awake and they want better. It's coming with all of these kilkulim, so that's the explanation that we're learning. But people are awake, Jews are awake. They're not settling anymore. I'm not going to live like this anymore. I'm not going to have the anti-Semite telling me what to do. I'm not going to live this way anymore. But along with that comes, I'm not going to have my parents telling me what to do. I'm not going to have my rabbi telling me what to do. I'm not going to have God telling me what to do. It comes with that. But that's what it comes with. Maimon Hashena Bo'organ HaChai B'yoseh Ba'adam, the maimon of being asleep in a living organism. B'yoseh Ba'adam, in a man, Machnis is Kol Karchosef Pnima. What happens when a person is asleep is that all of his karchos, or he's unconscious, all of his kaiches retreat to deep within himself. When you're sleeping, all of your kaiches, they don't disappear. All of your kaiches just withdraw deep, deep within yourself. And you're asleep. Machne says, kol kaichosef pnima. All of the kaiches go inside. Would you ever go, if there'd be a... Imagine you go to the zoo and there's a tiger that's sleeping there. And it looks like it, and your children are excited, and the children ask you, you know, the tiger's sleeping, could we go inside and pat it a little bit? And you ask the guy that's in charge, my kids would like to go inside, the tiger's sleeping, we could just go inside to, they'd like to see what it's like to what it feels like to pet the tiger. A pachad. The tiger is a sleeping tiger, and one step closer to that tiger, on the other side of the bars of the thing, this jail it's in, whatever. One step closer, the tiger's a tiger, and all the kaiches of the tiger come out. All the kaiches come out. To understand what a yid is. So we had this thing the other day with there were these young rabbanim, and then I was talking to them, and there was this rav that's going through. He's a rav in some town, someplace. I don't remember which town he was from. It was very, very, very hard there with the minyan. It's out in the. I'm not talking about like Baltimore or Detroit. I'm talking about some little place, and there were very few Jews there. Very, very few from Jews, and so he said a lashon. So everybody was like asking different questions and talking. So he asked me, he said that, I'm already there for a couple of years. And he said that I don't see that there's anything that I could do with these people. I'm trying, I don't see anything to do with these people. They're not interested in diving, they're not interested in learning. And I started yelling at him. I started to yell at the guy. Not in a bad way, but I started yelling at him. I said, what's the matter with you? What are you talking like that? You tell me that a Jew's not interested in diving? A Jew's not interested in learning? So I said, maybe you have to do something different. If you know, what do you mean? Wake him up. He says, what do you mean? How do you? I said, wake him up. Figure it out. How to wake him up? You have to wake the guy up. What do you mean? A Jew doesn't want to daven. A Jew doesn't want to learn.
So I'm not saying I could do that. I'm so good at that to wake people up. But don't say that he Keilu. You're making it sound like Keilu, this Jew, is like overbooked, like he's dead. He's not dead. He's a Jew. Wake him up. How do you wake him up? Well, you're not doing it the right way. I guess the last shiur you gave didn't wake him up. I don't know. We'll talk about it. But you got to wake him up. He's a Jew. A Jew is much, much bigger than a tiger. Much stronger than a tiger. A tiger's asleep. But he wakes up. Oh, that's the Bedichuva. He was a tiger that was awake. Rav Kook described himself as a tiger in a cage. When you see when it's awake, and it's a pachet. Mamash a pachet. So it's not the problem that Jew. It's not the problem with that Jew. The problem is that nobody is waking him up. And who knows what happened to him? Who put him to sleep? But no one's waking him up. So don't blame him. Wake him up. Figure it out. So maybe it's not working what you're saying. The reconstituted 1954 drusha from some, you know, the rabbi that spoke about. That we can't give in to Nancy Pelosi. I don't know. That's not working, I guess. So do something else. I guess it's not. You're not waking them up with Nancy Pelosi and with Donald Trump talk. It's not waking them up from their sleep. So talk about the Rebbeinu Shalom with them. You ever think about trying that? Talk to them. Jews like to hear about the Rebbeinu Shalom. Talk to them about Hakadosh Baruch Hu. He wakes. Wake them up. You're going to spend all the years there being a rabbi, showing them how Pasuk Aleph and Beis worked out together. I believe 100% that the Torah works out. All the psukim go together. It's mechayah. I don't know how to figure this particular pasuk out. I'll try to, and if I can't, somebody smarter will figure it out. But if you don't tell them that there's a Rebbeinu Shalom, if you don't tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mamish can't sleep because he misses him, so then don't blame him. Don't say that this Jew doesn't have any emunah, that this Jew doesn't care, there's nothing to do with him. How could you speak like that about a Yid? So I told him, you can't talk like that about a Jew. It's not his fault. How he went to sleep, why he's asleep, enough argument, I don't know how. But you got to wake him up. If Hashem put you there, then try to wake him up. And if what you're doing is not working, then think of something else. Try to figure something else out if that's not working. But it can't be. He's a tiger, this Jew. He's a lion. But he has to wake up. So somebody has to help him to get up. That's the whole job. That's what a friend has. If you have a friend of yours that's out of, you have to wake him up. Your kid, you have to wake up your kid, to wake up another Jew. That's what it is. The whole Indian is his sorry. That's all. To wake up. But you can only begin if you believe that this Jew is what to wake up. I remember I once told this to you that I was invited someplace once because there was an old friend of mine that davened in a certain shul someplace, and I was invited years ago to go speak. They were making Milava Malka. Milava Malka in that type of a world is just like a get together, a way to make some fun, you know, some fundraising. It wasn't like they weren't singing Sudos in a Davin Malka machine. But he went, and I didn't really want to go because I didn't feel it was like. I didn't feel that rabbi was going to be particularly fond of me, my whole mahalach, and my levush and everything. But there was pressure being put on him to let me come, but I didn't want to be in this inyan. Well, okay, but my friend asked, and they arranged it, so I said, okay, I'll go. So I went to the Malava Malka. There were no women there. There were like 50, 60 men. And the rabbi was there when I walked in, and I know he wasn't happy to see me. It's like he didn't hide it so much. So I said to him, good vach. And I asked him, what do you think the chevra needs? Like, what would you like me to speak to them about? So he said to me, the spoiled rich brats. I said, excuse me? He said, the spoiled rich brats. I thought maybe he was just like, was trying to be funny. But he said, and they just like walked away. He said, talk to me about it. It doesn't make a difference. They're not listening. I couldn't come back to myself for a few days after that. He's still a rabbi. I couldn't come back to myself. You're saying to me about your chevra that they're spoiled rich brats, and it doesn't make a difference what you say to them. Yeah. So what's going to be with this with these people and their children? What's going to be with them? That's how you see them. Nothing's going to help. That's what he said. It doesn't make a difference what you're talking about. In other words, like I've spoken to them, and doesn't make a difference. After I spoke to the Chevra, I'm still in touch with three of them. And that's already 25 years ago. Nothing helps to talk to them. Wake them up. Try to wake them up. But if you're ready to begin with, you touch them up as being spoiled, rich brats. To talk about Jews like that? Like a whole tzibur of spoiled, rich brats? How can it be such a... What are you talking about Jews in such a way? It's unbelievable to me. And then, so how do you expect it should be any different than davening with Avodas Hashem? You have to believe Ben Munah Shleima that this is a sleeping tiger. Every single your kids, every single one of them, our grandchildren, every Jew is mamish a tiger, a lion that's just right now sleeping. And if you don't know how to wake up, then you can get some help, figure it out, or whatever it is. But and then when you see that the kid is being awakened by is awakened, but there are others that are waking him up, and he's waking up, and he's doing crazy things. Then you want to take the, what's that tape called again?
Duct tape.
The duct tape, and tape the kid down to the bed. You want to get the duct tape out. Every parent walks around now with duct tape, in case my kid acts up. I gotta tape him up, and the yeshivas you gotta tape the kid up. Instead of letting him go. If it was up to me, it's a good thing it's not. But if it was up to me, there wouldn't be any walls. There would be nothing. No walls, nothing. Just everybody, kids having a good time and sitting outside and learning or make whatever it is, like camp all year round with Dov Berish. All year round. Camp. All year round. I'm not saying not learning. Strong learning. Davening. Not at 8 o'clock in the morning. 6 o'clock in the morning they would get up. If they'd feel happy, if they'd feel good. You ever see a kid that can't get up for a fishing trip? No such thing. You ever see a kid that can't get up to go to some game? No such thing. To go to a party? No such thing. Every kid will get up. You'd have them in 2 months. You'd have every one of these kids getting up. Every boy will be jumping out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. Excited to daven, excited to learn. And to play sports. And to have a good time. Every single one, every kid would be excited. And we're going to learn also some Navi, and we're going to learn some Chassidus, and we're going to sing some Nagunim. Then we're going to have 7 hours, we're going to learn Gemara strong. Every one of them will do it. Shulchan Aruch, every one of them will do it. And they're going to want to stay up late at night to hear stories of Tzaddikim, and to sit around a campfire, and to hear stories of Tzaddikim. Everyone. Can't do it. Duct tape. That's what it is. Everybody's duct tape. The whole issue. Base measures, the duct tape. Kihila Kadisha, duct tape. The whole Messiah is duct tape. Everything is everywhere duct tape. Because I was thinking about, because these teachers are thrown out. I mean, they shouldn't have done that. It's crazy. They're thrown out. It's crazy. I don't know what the kid did. I mean, he'd probably come out, maybe he was trying to kill him or something. I don't know what the kid did. But that's what's going on. Duct tape. Instead of children, the children want to be able to be awake. They want to be free. Instead, you say, come over, you take them to the doctor, your kid's acting up. The school said, unless your kid goes to the psychiatrist, we can't let him back into class. But he's only 7 years old. Unless he goes to the psychiatrist, I'm not exaggerating. This happens all the time. Unless he goes to the psychiatrist, he can't come back to class. Take the kid to the psychiatrist talks to him for 5 minutes, the kid, and then, jing, and then a couple of pills, take this, the next, it starts to work over the next 30 days, come back to class, and the kid sits in class. Yes, Rabbi, yes, Mara. I'm a chaya.
Rabbi, maybe last week Rabbi was talking about like all the disengagement in kids now, like kids just like the opposite, meaning, so maybe, is that why also? Because like these kids are just being...
Of course it's one of the reasons.
Put down.
Like, sure, it's one of the reasons. And then later on, everybody says, how could this kid's on drugs? The kid's on drugs. How could... What do you mean? You're the one that got him on drugs to begin with.
Put him to sleep.
Maybe. You put him to sleep. And now when the kid wakes up, he gets scared. That's why he's taking drugs. He's scared when he's awake. He's scared because he can't deal with life. Because he's used to being asleep. So now the only thing he knows how to do is to take some pills to put him back to sleep. because then he feels good. Because when he's awake, life is too scary. So then I talk to these kids, and now he goes, he takes the pills, and he feels good. Now I'm asleep. No. The world doesn't bother me now. The world doesn't bother me now. Who did that to the kid? He did it to himself. The kid's to blame? So now we have to make a new organization, a new kids at risk. Who's to blame for it? Who's to blame? We're to blame for it, not the kid. The kids, the healthy, normal kids. It didn't fit into your thing. It didn't fit into your picture of what school is like or what a kid is like. So he didn't fit in. So then you give him pills so he should fit in. And then afterwards, now he wants to keep on taking pills later on in life. And he said, oh, no. Now you can't take any pills. Only the pills that I gave you. Now you can't take pills. And you have to deal with life. We can't deal with life. You killed the kid. You put him to sleep when he was little. So that you as parents or the teachers should be able to handle him. I'm not saying that every teacher, God forbid, I'm not saying every parent. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't know how to handle that kid in class either. I don't know. It's hard. But the mitzvah is a very, very scary mitzvah that we're in. And this is what's going on. You walk into a class and the kids are on drugs. Little kids. You don't know who, what. All of a sudden, this little kid. There's a whole story somebody told me. I mean, I don't know if it's real or not real. There was somebody that the kid was supposed to take his medicine, whatever. It turns out that the Rebbe didn't take his medicine. The Rebbe wasn't taking his medicine. The reason that the Rebbe was going nuts about this kid was they found out the Rebbe was not taking his medication. The kid was like a difficult kid, in a chinami. He was a difficult kid. But the Rebbe was like going after him terrible. And they can't come back to class and get all these punishments. And it turned out that at the end of the mice, they found out that the Rebbe was not taking his medication. Yeah? The kid was a regular kid. So how come the Rebbe couldn't handle him? He wasn't taking his medication. So now we have to have everybody in the class medicated. Soon it's going to be just walking like, just have like sleeping baby. Or like, remember when we were little, they put out these little things on the floor and they, because the teachers don't want to have like 2 hours off, so they make, it's like sleep time. You remember that? I remember that when I was like in kindergarten, it was sleep time. I don't remember ever sleeping. But nap time, right. Nap time was just like, I don't know, the ladies went to have coffee or something and they put these little filthy mats on the floor and they say, guy schluffen, and we just,
why do we?
What?
It's going to be a pharmacy in every school.
Yeah, you have cabinets, you can take whatever drugs you want for everybody to sleep. Everybody will just sleep. The teachers will be sleeping and have some intravenous thing set up and they'll take electrodes and they'll put the Gemara into a thing and they'll go into the head and everybody will be sleeping and be machai. And we shall wake up soon. Now, good Shabbos. Shabbos.